Srila Prabhupada, in these two paragraphs, is speaking about how when Brahma was created from the Lord's navel in the lotus, Brahma had nothing else, no other ingredients in this world to do any activity other than the Lord's body itself. So Prabhupada is highlighting the point in the beginning that nothing can come out of nothing. Everything comes out of something. It's making the point. And the second paragraph is also very interesting. He is saying that the impersonalists argue that if everything is God, what is there to offer to Him? There is nothing, there is no need. Sometimes the impersonalists argue, if the Lord is all-knowing, then what is the use of you going in front of the deities and offering prayers? He anyway knows what you need, what you want and everything. There is no need of offering Him anything because He owns everything. There is no need of offering a prayer because He is knowledgeable about everything. And what is to be done? Then you assume that you are God. So this is impersonalist statement. Prabhupada is arguing about it in the second paragraph. So generally, people in the modern times who are religious, are pious, they fear to oppose scientific theories. One of the reasons for that is they feel that it's better for us to go hand in hand with scientists and scholars and literati and all those people. Like recently in Pune there is a very famous school. I think it is Delhi Public School, I think, is it? Delhi Public School. They have 5,000 children. I came to know that many of the millionaire's children go to that school, and it's a very famous school and best standard and everything. So we thought we will start some value education there. So when we sent a team of Grihastha devotees to go and meet the principal, madam, so she said she was very happy that we want to start value education. She was very happy. But she said we are going to put up a drama on Dashavatara Stotram. So we are going to put side by side Dashavatara on one side, on the other side Darwin's evolution theory on the other, on the stage. Why? Because Darwin says everything starts from a singular cell, single cell multiplying from beginning from amoeba, then, you know, she said then there are aquatics, then there are amphibians, and then there are land creatures, then there are birds, beasts and all that, and then there is human being, everything. So in India there are 2-3 organizations like Aurobindo and 2-3 others. They came up with this kind of theory. They said that Dashavatara also follows Darwin's evolution theory. That is their that is their contention. That gradually, so they say then become human being, and then human being becomes divine, God, and he becomes a superman. So Kalki is a superman who is going to come in future or whatever. So this is simply a concoction of the weak-minded religionists who simply wanted to be validated by the modern-day scientists. Actually, the Shastras say all the creatures are created at once. There are examples we can give. Like 6th canto, you will find Timi. From Timi comes all the aquatics. Timi is a woman. She's a mother of all the aquatics. From her, all the aquatics come. It's clearly explained. Similarly, all the reptiles come from another mother. So they are all simultaneously created. And in the same manner, it is not that the Dashavatara evolves one from the other. Actually, what is Dashavatara? If you see Dashavatara or 24 avatars, they are all having transcendental bodies. Just like sometimes You know, the children eat different types of, different shapes of biscuits, you see. Sometimes they have a rabbit or an elephant or a tiger. I like tiger biscuit. I like rabbit biscuit. Huh? So when somebody was passing through a house, the children were talking, "Hey, I like rabbit. I like tiger. I like deer." Somebody heard it, they became afraid. "Hey, how are these children eating tiger?" Huh? So he peeped through the window and he saw them having biscuits. You have seen these biscuits? Different shapes. But although these biscuits are of different shapes and forms, all the biscuits are made up of the same flour. Similarly, the Lord takes Matsya avatar, Kurma avatar, Varaha avatar, Narsingha avatar, different avatars, but the Lord's body is made of only one substance. What is it? Satchidananda Vigraha. Not that one comes from another. Also, unless one is deeply understood in the scriptures, one cannot appreciate what is the meaning of expansion. Is there anyone here who has experience of expanding ourselves into even two or three bodies? You have no experience. But if somebody can expand, Lord can expand. For example, his ear is also there. It's called as Advaitam. Advaitam achyutam anadim anantarupam adhyam purana purusham navayavvanam cha. Advaitam means the Lord is expanding into another form, and whatever is happening in that form, this form also knows. Because the Lord has oneness, at the same time He expands into many forms like Lord Rama, Lord Vishnu, and multiple Vishnu forms in the hearts of all the living entities. And all these expansions are all spiritual, completely spiritual. There is no question of one body evolving into another body. You know, amphibian becoming a, you know, land animal or a bird or something like that. But why in this school that principal was making this? Because they feel that, you know, we want to, you know, we want to marry science and religion together. We don't want to divorce them. Because if you divorce science and religion, then either you become completely religious and go to God, or you become completely scientific, you become an atheist. And then you make a lot of money, a lot of facilities, and then you die, you don't know where will you go. Maybe God may be angry with you that you never bowed down to Him. So people want to marry science and religion. And how is science and religion to be married? That Prabhupada taught. For that, as Prabhupada taught the Ardha Pangunyai, the wisdom of East and the technology of West can combine. Wisdom should sit on the shoulder of technology. India should sit on the shoulder of America. So India should give direction and America should follow. That was Prabhupada's plan. That is the right way of marrying science and religion. Otherwise, foolishly, somebody who is not well informed about the Shastras may say that ABTK, OBTK, Sapuchtik, everything is all right. So, I just gave one example. We can give innumerable examples how people try to align with whatever bogus theories are floated in. One Christian group is saying, "We agree whatever scientists say. First everything began from a big bang. And then God came into picture after that and He created everything." So they are also trying to align with scientists. So Srila Prabhupada was a very bold preacher. When he went to the West, he never made any compromises. He spoke the truth. Nothing can come out of nothing, he writes in this purport. Everything has to have come from something. Like Prabhupada would ask the scientists, atheistic scientists in the West, how do you think this universe has come about? And they would say, in the dawn of creation, there were chemicals from which, you know, they combine both the explanation about origin of life and origin of universe, both. And then Prabhupada immediately challenged, where did those chemicals come from? From whom the chemicals have come? So some of them would say, no, the chemicals were there. But where did they come from? Today, in science, everyone knows that the universe was not existing for all the time. By carbon-nitrogen cycle, you can prove that the universe was created at a certain point of time. And it has a lifespan also. Everyone knows it. As soon as we say it was created, The next question comes, by whom? And Prabhupada, it's a very simple example. You say Big Bang, even in market yard, if there is a bomb blast, what is the first question people ask? Who put the bomb? Are they, you know, Kashmiri terrorists? Are they LTTE? Which group of terrorists? Who put the bomb? Even a small bomb in market yard, you ask who put the bomb, and you are talking about a big bang, not a small bang. Then some big person must have put it. Who is that big person? Isn't it? So you have to ask that question. Who? That is intelligence. If somebody says, no, nobody put it, bomb blasted. Will anybody agree? If the newspaper says, some bomb blasted, and we, somehow or other, we believe that nobody must have put the bomb. It blasted on its own. What will they call the newspaper as? They are fools. So that was Prabhupada's argument. Nothing can come out of nothing. And then Prabhupada said, okay, because you don't know the explanation, I will give you the explanation. And then Prabhupada said, just like when you are lying down, your body is perspiring. In the daytime or nighttime in hot summer. Isn't it? And then some water comes out. But because you have a little body, only little water can come out. But the Lord has a huge body, so He emanates huge waters, called as the Garbhodak ocean, in which He lies down. And that Lord Vishnu is the source of the lotus flower, from which Brahma is born, as you see here. So, Prabhupada would say, you will see when there is a living body, then all chemicals come. Like if there is a lemon tree, then there can be chemicals coming out of lemon tree. Isn't it? But you cannot inject chemicals on a dead tree and revive the life. That's not possible. That means from living body comes chemicals. Chemicals cannot produce life. So you say that all these chemicals are the dawn of creation. They must have come from some living body. And that living body is God's body. Even though we find so many chemicals in everything in this world, they all have come from Krishna's body. Krishna, and Prabhupada says, Krishna claims ownership. Bhumi rapo vanalo vayukam manah buddhire vacha ahankara itiyam me. Means? Me means mine. So Krishna has clearly signed up agreement. My dear living entities, understand, you find many, many elements around you when you are born, which you didn't create. I have created them and they belong to me. Me. Itiyam me. Bhinna prakriti rashada. Bhinna me. Prabhupada used to quote this. These are my separated energies. Although they are separated from me, still they belong to me. And then Prabhupada says the next verse. Apareyam itastvanyam prakritim biddhi me param. Again, Krishna uses the word me there also. Besides this inferior energy, my dear Arjuna, there is also a superior energy which constitutes the spiritual world. And that energy also belongs to me. So material energy belongs to me, spiritual energy belongs to me, and I am the source of both of them, which he says in another verse, Yetad yoni ni bhutani sarvani ityupadaraya aham krishnasya jagata prabhava pralaya sada. I am the source of them, I am the pralaya for them. Both I do. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. Everything emanates from me. So, then Prabhupada would say, what more proof you want? Krishna has clearly said, what is the origin of all the elements in this world? And everyone and everything. So if you don't have explanation, then you have to accept my explanation. Prabhupada would argue like that. That's why here he says, nothing can come out of nothing. And Lord Vishnu, lying in the Garbhodak ocean, gives birth to Brahma without the aid of anyone else. And Brahma is the first created living being. And Brahma, when he opens the eyes, all he finds is only darkness in this world. Srila Prabhupada explains elsewhere that two great personalities in this world, one is Durga Devi, Parvati, another one is Brahma. They offer a very great support to the Lord in maintaining and running this material world. Durga Devi participates in Srishti, Sthiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shakti, Rekha. She participates in all the three. But you will find Durga Devi or Parvati sitting right next to Shiva and always asking questions to Shiva. And Shiva keeps giving explanation. And Prabhupada says, this goes to show that even the deity of material energy personified, Durga, is also in ignorance. Otherwise, why is she inquiring? I don't know this, I don't know that. Please tell me, what is this, what is that? And also the first created son, Brahma, he is also born in darkness, ignorance. So if those two great personalities are in ignorance, what to speak of tiny creatures like us? Can anybody claim to be born in wisdom? Everyone is born in darkness. That's why, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya, Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. So, this ignorance has to be eradicated. Only when one surrenders to Lord or the spiritual master in the parampara. So then the Lord himself gave a clue to Brahma that you perform this penance, tapas. You meditate on me. It's very amazing to understand this point. Brahma got off the lotus, he walked down the stem, and he stood right on the navel of Vishnu. And he looked on all the directions and he didn't see anything. He saw only darkness. Can you imagine? He's standing on the navel and is watching. And he couldn't see anything. Why? Because his eyes had not become tinged with salve of love for the Lord by dint of austerities and penances. He hadn't done the necessary homework to see the Lord. That is why sometimes we find a student may come to our lectures and ask a very complex question from Mahabharata or Ramayana. But often we find, although there is an answer available to his question, he doesn't have sufficient realization to understand the answer. Isn't it? So what we generally do, we just give a pat on the back, give him some prasadam, tell him to come regularly and send him off. Because after 2 years, if he asks the same question, he will understand. Why? Because he has performed chanting, reading, associating with devotees, and he has become more submissive. That's how he develops understanding. Just like if a child is not submissive to go to school and stay under the custody of the teacher, do the homework, be obedient to the teacher, study the books, give exams. If the child doesn't do, can the child expect to get a graduation degree? Not possible. So the even enlightenment in material education comes by obedience, submissiveness, by agreeing to abide by the laws. And then over a period of time, he becomes educated. In the same manner, Brahma was also given a homework by the Lord. Perform tapasya. And then he closed his eyes and performed penance for 1,000 celestial years. And then when he opened his eyes, the Lord lifted his lotus feet and he showed the pinkish lotus feet. That was the first thing Brahma saw. And in that lotus feet he saw there was a nupur. What do you call that? Ankle. Ankle bells. And then he saw the dazzling golden pitambar dhoti of the Lord, which was shining like suns, many suns. As he went on observing, and then he saw the Lord's hip with a jeweled belt, shining beautifully. Then he saw the Lord's hips, the Lord's chest, decorated with so many beautiful ornaments and garlands and shining ornaments studded with diamond and everything. The Kaustubha Mani, he saw all that. Then he saw the Lord's beautiful arms. Lord's arms were like a bluish sapphire. And they were decorated with bracelets and armlets. And as he saw the neck and then the face of the Lord, was smiling so cheerfully. The Lord's eyes were closed partially. And with semi-closed eyes he was observing. And in Bhagavatam you will find, while describing the Rupam, see, there is Naam, Rup, Gun, Leela, isn't it? So, while describing the Rup, there is a description in Bhagavatam which says, the Lord has, lotus feet like this, hands like this, and face like this. And when he talks about the smile of the Lord, the Lord's face is decorated with a smile which is constantly exuding desire to offer boons to his devotees and also compassion. Now somebody may say, why is the quality being described? And quality should be described separately. We are talking about the roop. Roop means the form of the Lord. But they, in Bhagavatam it is said, the form of the Lord has such a smile. Anyone who sees the smile can say that the Lord is eager to protect me and the Lord is eager to offer benedictions to me. The smile, as an integral part of itself, includes it. And then he saw the beautiful lotus petal like eyes. He saw the beautiful helmet on the mukut, on the Lord's head, and the Makara Kundal on his ears. As soon as he saw that beautiful face, Brahma loudly exclaimed, "Oh, this is Lord Hari," he said. Who taught him that was Hari? Only Lord Hari knows. Nobody taught him before. The beauty of meditation and performing penance is that the truths will be revealed within the core of our hearts. At that time, the conviction that one will get will be so enormous, you don't need anybody externally to convince you of the truth. It will be a personal experience, a realization for an awakened devotee. That kind of realization Brahma got. Lord became very pleased with him. So, the same Brahma, sitting in the same place, before performing penance and after performing penance. See the difference. Before performing penance, although he walked on the Lord's navel, he couldn't see anything. But after performing the penances, he could clearly see the beautiful form of the Lord. Of course, the Lord shook his hands, congratulated Brahma and everything, and he enlightened him about how to do the creation and everything, which subsequently follows. But the point here is that there is an explanation given in the scriptures very vividly, elaborately and scientifically how the creation took place. Like in the Bible, for example, it says, Lord said, let there be earth, and there was earth. Lord said, let there be light, and there was light. Whereas, in the Sanatana Dharma scriptures, the explanation is given very deeply through the Sankhya philosophy. It says that when Lord Mahavishnu breathes, from his breathing comes the sound, which is called as Nada Brahmam. From that sound vibration, everything begins. Anavrittihi Shabdat. Everything begins from that sound vibration only. And then from that sound comes air, from that air comes fire, from fire comes water, from water comes earth. Somebody may wonder, how can earth come from water? It's like saying, from water comes ice, isn't it? Ice is solid and water is liquid. But when you condense ice, reduce the temperature, when you condense water, it can become ice. When you evaporate water, it becomes steam. Similarly, from air, from sound comes air, from air comes fire, from fire comes water, from water comes earth. And so in this way, the transformations take place. And the grossest thing is the earth, which we can perceive. And the previous element contains the other elements, if you see. So sound contains everything in it, in very subtle form. They are all kept in a very, very subtle form. Just like we say, when you have milk, you can make milk into dahi, isn't it? From dahi you can make buttermilk and also butter. You can churn and make butter. From butter we can make ghee. Like that we have fine, which means in milk all the other elements are present. Like that in sound, all the elements are present. The grossest things we see, like the earth and the water and fire and air and ether, everything. And how these things form are also explained. For example, this is sense of touch. Make the sound. Sound is produced from air and sense of touch. Because when you clap the hands, the air comes out. And also there is sense of touch. From both these things, sound is produced. Like that we can explain about each of them, how each of the things are produced. If you read Sankhya philosophy, that describes in great detail, right from the dawn of creation, how every element was created. And after the 24 elements were created, that's called the conglomeration of elements. Just like we make a big chapatika atta, we make. And then take out little portion and make one gola. Similarly, from that conglomeration, the elements are taken, our bodies are made, like chapati, gola. one material body. And inside which one soul is inserted. Okay, sit inside. Go now. go into the world of three modes and run here and there. Like morning we were giving the pakoda example, isn't it? Now it is chapati now. Not rolled chapati, round one, gola one. Huh? So this is material body of 24 elements made. So we know from the scriptures how these elements have come. Nothing can come out of nothing. Everything comes from the Lord. That is the first thing he explains. Second paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, the impersonalists argue that there is no use in worshipping the Lord when everything is nothing but the Lord himself. Sarvam kalvamidam brahma. The personalist, however, worships the Lord out of a great sense of gratitude, utilizing the ingredients born out of the bodily limbs of the Lord. You see, the Lord himself says, in this world, he comes as Archavatara. Archavatar. So the Archavatar in this world, in the preliminary stage, appears to a worshipper like a deity, like a murti made of stone or wood or metal or anything like that. Many people think they are very intelligent, and they think that, okay, there is a book called as, what is that book? Prema Pradeep, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, two students, two babus from Bengal, they go to different people, different gurus to understand about God. So they go to one Yogi Babaji, they go. So there, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur does in that book, he explains how these two sincere seekers, as they go, they have many misconceptions about religious principles, religion and philosophy. And then they go and ask questions and then they get answers. So by making this character play, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has made that whole book very interesting. And then what he does, through their questions, he is clarifying our questions. So that time, I'll tell you one small section of this. In one night, these two students are sleeping. And they are asking to themselves, hey, our Yogi Baba, he knows all the Ashtanga Yoga. Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana. He is so deeply learned and realized. But yet he worships the deity form of the Lord. Why he worships the deity form? And then the other fellow says, maybe I think he is accepting this deity form as a representative of the impersonal truth. Just because, you know, impersonal cannot be meditated upon. So it's difficult to contemplate and meditate. So he's accepting this murti form. So he gives an explanation. Like the time, which has no form, can be given a shape in the form of a clock. So you may accept a clock. The clock represents the time, but the clock itself is not the time. Even if you break the sticks of the clock, or you remove the battery and say, don't move, still the time is going to move anyway. It's a representation of the time. So next day morning, they get up and ask Yogi Baba, is it like that? The deity is some kind of symbol for representing the impersonal truth. And Yogi Baba says, no. The deity is not a symbol. The deity is God. That the deity is the Supreme Lord himself, as he is in the spiritual world. And he says that the deity is Krishna. In the spiritual world, Krishna is Satchidananda Swarupam. In the same Swarupa, Krishna appears in the material world as Archa Vigraha. And the Yogi Baba explains to them that if you elevate yourself in spiritual life, gradually you will go higher and higher in your consciousness. And at a certain stage, you will understand that the Archavatar is able to behave and speak and deal with you just as you deal with anybody else. When your eyes become tinged with salve of love, at that time, he says, one will be able to reciprocate with the Lord in the same manner as one reciprocates with anyone else. Like that he says. For example, you see a mother and a child, they have a mutual relationship, isn't it? Say if a mother is going to Dasar Boys School or the children's school, there are 300 children running in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, running here and there, carrying their bag, wearing their uniform, looking, where is my mother and father, isn't it? And the mother is looking at all the faces and she is looking for one face. Huh? One particular face cut she is looking for. Huh? Where is my child? Huh? Looking, isn't it? And then looking here and there very much with great anxiety. At last she finds that one face. And the child also is looking all the mother's and father's faces. Child is not satisfied. Where is that one mother's face? Huh? Child is looking for that particular face cut. Huh? At last when they both see each other's face, the child comes running to the mother. Mother picks up. Now, the other people, the other mothers and fathers who have come, they don't feel such affection for this child. Isn't it? Just like this mother feels for this child. Those people, it makes no difference for them. So many children are running here and there, it makes no difference. Because the mother has affection for this child and child has affection for the mother, that reciprocation is there. Similarly, when a devotee very sincerely and seriously executes devotional service, gradually that kind of devotional attraction is awakened in the heart. And then as that attraction matures up more and more and more, now this mother and child, when they talk to each other, the whole world disappears from them. Isn't it? Although so many children are running, buses are moving, some people are putting the horns, and so much noisy world around, but although the world around is very noisy and disturbing and distracting, the mother and child, you know, mother is asking, how was your examination? Child is asking, what tiffin have you made for me at home? You know, has papa come back or whatever? They are talking. In that talking, in that small circle of the talk, the whole outside world vanishes. It doesn't exist for them. Similarly, for the devotee also, when the devotee serves the deity very diligently, then the Lord will reciprocate. And as Prabhupada explains here, the impersonalists do not know this art, because of which they foolishly claim that if everything is wanted by the Lord, then what are they going to offer? That's why they cannot do any service to Lord. Because they think if everything is owned by God, what are we going to offer? But you know, as we say, tera tujuko arpana. We say, no, tera tujuko arpana. I am offering what is yours with me, I am offering it back to you. Isn't it? Kya lage mera? What did I bring from my side? I don't have anything to give. Whatever I have is all yours. I am offering it back to you. Similarly, I am taking Ganga and offering it back to Ganga. Or it's like a child. Child may call, Papa, Papa, lift me up. The father is lifting child up. Child puts his hand into his pocket and takes out some 10 rupee note. Father is saying, hey, what are you, why are you stealing money from me? Child says, just wait and see what I am going to do. Child goes to market and brings some chocolate and says, Papa, do you know it's your birthday today? Please take this. Father is not going to slap him. You took money from me and you are giving me birthday gift. Isn't it? And father knows what is important is not just the chocolate, but what is being given with love. I have seen so many mothers and fathers, you know, sitting next to child, you know. Like I have seen them begging the child, please, you know, give me some food. The child will, you know, crush the food like this. And then when child is trying to put in the mouth, most of the food will fall on the ground. You know, 2-3 grains will go inside. Many of the parents, you will see them begging the child, please give me a little bit. So if the child, somehow or other, sometimes child may give also, take it. And they feel so happy. That my child gave me, my child loves me so much that my child gave me. So in the same manner, the Lord also delights in accepting a gift from his devotee because it is offered with love. That's what he appreciates. Otherwise everything is owned by him only. What does not belong to him? Even we ourselves belong to him. So the Vaishnava Siddhanta explains very beautifully how service of the devotee for the Lord and the Lord's reciprocation forms the central theme of the spiritual world also. That is the main theme of the spiritual world. Without service, there is no life for a devotee. Vinamat sevanam jana. Even though 5 muktis may be awarded to a devotee doesn't accept them at all. Unless they are awarded along with service. So, I was thinking of speaking some pastimes of Lord Balaji. These are very famous in South India. Ramanujacharya in 1017, which is about 1000 years ago. 1000 years ago, once he was sitting in an assembly of 74 acharyas. We were all sitting together. So he was speaking about the glory of different places. He was telling Lord Ranganath. He is living in Bhoga Mandapam, they call it. Bhoga Mandapam means Lord Ranganath is constantly surrounded by his devotees who worship him with great love, and he delights in that company. And he said Lord Varadaraja lives in Tyaga Mandapam in Kanchi. And then he was reading one particular verse from scripture which said Lord Balaji lives in Pushpaka Mandapam. And immediately he thought of Balaji. He stopped his lecture. And he went into trance for some minutes. Then he came out and said, he said, Lord Balaji, or Srinivas, he lives on the top of the seven hills. And today, those seven hills have become surrounded by such thick forests and trees and bushes. Still, the temple must be there of Balaji there. Because Balaji has been worshipped by even the Alvars for many, many years ago. And he said, is there anyone amongst you who can take the charge of actually making the Tirupati into a Pushpaka Mandapam or a place of a beautiful flower garden which could be offerable to Lord Balaji? And all the people are looking at each other because everyone was aware that it is a mountain infested with leopards and tigers, snakes and other dangerous reptiles. It was also a place of malaria. Nobody would even climb up. There was no proper facility to even climb up also there. It was all full of forest. So, amongst those acharyas, one of them, Ananta Alvar, he immediately got up and said, oh, beloved acharya, for your pleasure I will do anything. Please offer me this privilege and blessings of developing this beautiful garden for Balaji. And Ramanujacharya felt so happy, he immediately stood up and he came up to this Ananta Alvar and he embraced him and said, today I declare upon you the name Aunt Pillai, he told them. Krishna is there, Krishna Prabhu? It's not here. Krishna Prabhu will understand the meaning of this. Aunt means male. Aunt Pillai means a man who is powerful. He said, here is, in this assembly of 74 acharyas, here is a man who is really a real man, most powerful man, who is ready to dedicate his life for such a challenging task, almost a formidable task. And he congratulated him and all the acharyas blessed him. And then Ananta Alvar, along with his wife, they went to the hill. So three things had to be developed. The temple had to be renovated, and worship of Balaji was to be re-established, and the Nandanvan, they call it, the garden, the Nandanvan garden had to be made, and beautiful flowers had to be produced there, and also a lake was to be dug in front of the temple. All this was to be done, and just you can imagine, one husband and wife, one family, dedicated to the order of the Guru, they proceeded there to the top of the hill. And Ananta Alvar was practically fearless. So very soon, they started the work. At that time, his wife was pregnant also. She was carrying. So he started digging in one place with a spade and putting it in basket. And then he will give it to his wife. And she would go to a faraway place and it was to be thrown off there. And then she would come back. And Lord Srinivas became greatly pleased, seeing that this devotee has taken this great vow to develop these things. He became very joyful. So he came in the form of a very beautiful young brahmachari boy. Although he was a brahmachari boy, he was wearing very beautiful dresses. Colorful dresses he was wearing. And he was also wearing kundal. Very nice kundal and nice jewelry on his body. And his face was shining like sun, very beautiful. So he came and he was watching them doing this. And then he came to Ananta Alvar and said, oh, my dear gentleman, I am seeing you that you are digging with a spade and working so hard. And you are already old. This may be very difficult for you to do. And look at me, I am a young man. It is very easy for me to take this rod and the spade and dig the ground, and I can very easily transfer all the mud to that place. And look at your wife, she is carrying a child and she has a frail body. You both will not be able to do this work. It's better for you to supervise me doing this work. And I will do this work hard. You just keep watching me. When Anantalwar heard it, he looked at him up and down and said, "See, you are a Brahmana boy and your body is so tender that you can't even carry the ornaments you are wearing. Your body looks so delicate." And he said, "Boys like you are unfit for this task. Look at my rugged body. My body is meant for doing this type of work. And this service is given to me by my spiritual master." And he said, "You cannot take away this service from me. If you still you are bent upon doing this kind of work, you go elsewhere and do similar type of work. But you don't come in my way. We will manage ourselves. Get out of here. If you don't get out of here and you trouble us, I will hit you with my spade," he said. And the boy was taken aback. Then he stood behind and kept watching them carrying this mud and putting. Then he went a little distance ahead where this wife of Anantalwar was carrying the basket of mud and putting. And he saw her. She was practically limping with great difficulty to walk with her thin body. So then this boy went to her, and when she was walking, he also walked along with her, talking to her with very sweet words. And gradually he cajoled her to hand over the basket to him. And being a soft-hearted woman, she felt like a mother for the boy. Then she handed over the basket to him. And then he told her, she was telling, "If my husband comes to know that you have taken away this basket from me, he'll be angry." He said, "Don't worry. You bring the basket to some distance and give it to me. Then I will go and throw it and come back and give the empty basket. Then you can take it back. In this way, job will be done and you won't have the strain." And she also agreed. And then Anantalwar was digging more and more, and he found that she is returning back very quickly. How she is able to come back so easily? He asked her, "What is the secret? How you are able to come so fast? And she honestly told the truth, that this boy is helping me, this brahmachari boy. And Anantalwar, his eyes became reddish with rage. Immediately he ran to the direction where the boy was there. And the boy started running away, saying that he is chasing me. He ran and ran, and he said, "Oh, please, don't beat me. I have come to help you." And then the boy immediately climbed up a banyan tree. He went to the top of a banyan tree and put leaves around him and he hid himself. Only the voice could be heard. He said in a loud voice, he said, "My dear gentleman, if you spare my life, if you don't beat me, I can promise you that I'll give you this beautiful golden jewelry studded with diamond. I'll offer this as a gift to you, provided you don't harm me." So Anantalwar thought that now it's difficult for me to get up the tree and bring him down. So if I agree, he will come down. So Anantalwar said, "Okay, now I will spare your life. No problem. Go. Don't repeat your activities again," he said. And as the boy got down from the tree and started briskly walking, he just turned his face to the back to see whether anybody is following him. And at a little distance, he saw Anantalwar coming running towards him to capture him. Then the boy also started running. And because he was young, he could run very swiftly. And Anantalwar understood, "I cannot catch him." So he threw the spade very forcefully. So the spade came and hit his chin. And it started profusely bleeding. And the boy immediately ran into the temple and he closed the door. And Anantalwar battered the door of the temple repeatedly. Pat, 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 pat. He was battering. But he was not opening inside. Anyway, that evening the pujari's priest came and they could not open the door. They asked Anantalwar, "What happened?" He said, one boy has gone inside. "Now you all open the door, we will catch him. Let him come out." So priest, with great difficulty, they broke open the door, and inside the sanctum sanctorum they didn't find that boy. They only found Balaji, Srinivas. And in Srinivas's chin, that was bleeding there, in the same place, chin. And immediately, Anantalwar came in the front, he offered obeisances, and he was so advanced that he could speak to the Lord. He asked the Lord, "My dear Lord, what happened to you?" He started crying. And the Lord said, "How can you forget the matter so quickly? It just happened. It just happened this afternoon. You only hit me with a spade. I actually wanted to help you in your service. You are offering service to your guru and I wanted to assist you in your service, but you became angry with me and you hit me. And that's how I have this thing. And then he made Anantacharya went and prepared some herbs and he applied it in the chin. It's called as Karpuram. The Karpur. Tirukarpuram they call it. So they took the Karpur and he offered a kind of paste in the Lord's chin. So even today, in all the Sri Vaishnava temples and Balaji Srinivas temples, you will see them putting Karpur here in the chin. For our Balaji also you will see. And later on it is taken out and given as prasad to the bhaktas afterwards. Lord became greatly pleased with Anantalwar's love for him. Lord performs many wonderful pastimes like this. Yesterday I was telling you very briefly one pastime which I would like to little elaborately tell you. Once when Anantalwar went to pluck some tulasi leaves from the garden, at the time he was bitten by a serpent. And he didn't mind. When he got the biting, immediately he went and took a dip in the Pushkarani, the pond he had made. And then he came after bathing to render service to Lord Srinivas. And all the disciples knew. They knew that Anantalwar was bitten by a serpent. And there was talk going on. People are talking. He was bitten by a serpent. He has not taken any medicine. They had prepared medicine to give him. But he refused to take. So when he went to worship Lord Srinivas. So Srinivas personally spoke to him. He asked him, "Oh Ananta, why didn't you take, why didn't you accept the medicine for the snake bite?" So he said in response to that, "Which poison are you talking about?" And the Lord talked about poison. He said, "I have one poison within me which is like a big cobra." What is it? Ahankar and Mamakar. I have this false ego. That is a great poison that every living being suffers from. And that poison kills the soul. And this poison given by the serpent, it only kills the body. So, and my dear Lord, you are the medicine for the Ahankar and Mamakar poison. And I am here serving you. And by serving you, when that poison is destroyed, then my soul will be saved. Who cares for the body? Body will anyway fall apart, he said. And then Lord Srinivas told them, "No, no, my dear Ananta." He said, "Your association is so valuable for me. It's so important. If your body dies, then I cannot meet you and accept your services that you offer me. So I am afraid that I will lose your company. So for my sake, you should take the medicine," he said. Again, Anantalwar told him, "My dear Lord, whose potency is more powerful, we will wait and see." He said, "If the potency of the biter is a serpent, is more, then my body will perish. In that case, I will go to the Viraja River, take a dip in the river, and I will come to Vaikuntha to meet you there. And I will continue rendering my service to you there. And if the potency of the bitten is more, which is me, then I will take a dip in the Pushkarani here and I will render service to you here. Whether either here or there, my dharma is to render service to you." Lord became jubilant and pleased with him. And after that, Anantacharya never died. Nor did he take any medicine for that. So, in Sri Sampradaya, they say this Anantacharya or Anantalwar is an Amsha of Anantashesh. Who is also counted amongst the Nitya Suris. Like Garuda, Anantashesh, Vishwaksen, They are all called as Nitya Suris. Nitya Suris means those who are like Nitya Siddhas. They never fall. Only when Lord comes, they come in this world. So his Amsha of Ananta means he will have the quality of Lakshmana. Lakshman or Balaram, the type of quality he will have. He's an Amsha. Another time, one day, when Antalvar was preparing a garland to be offered, because it's a Pushpa Mandapam, which means the Lord should be offered always beautiful flowers produced from the garden. So one day he was preparing a beautiful flower garland in the Mandapam, sitting in the Mandap. And suddenly, Lord Srinivas expressed his desire to meet Anantalvar. He spoke to a pujari in Akashwani that call Anantalvar, I want to speak to him. The minute the pujari went running to the Mandapam, he said, the Lord wants to speak to you. Please come. He said, no, I cannot come now. Why? Because I am preparing this garland. And these flowers, this is the time they blossom. Exactly the time of blossoming, I have to prepare this garland, fully blown. And if I leave this garland behind to talk to someone, then the flower will dry up and the service will not be done. It's my guru's order that I have to prepare this garland every day and offer it to Lord Srinivas. So tell him that I will come after some time. The Lord told the pujari, no, I want to meet him immediately, call him. And he said, I'm coming. He said he prepared a beautiful garland. And then he took the garland and went to offer to Balaji, Srinivas. The Lord became angry with him. The Lord told him, Ananta, I called you to come and meet me. You rejected my request. What will happen to you if I send you out of the seven hills and I tell you, I throw you out of the seven hills and tell you that you cannot stay with me here anymore? What will you do? He asked. So Anantalvar very coolly replied. He said, my dear Lord, it's not that you called me here. I have been sent by my special master to make this flower garland for you every day and offer this service to you every day. He has sent me. In fact, this seven hills, that doesn't belong to me or you. Even you came to the seven hills a little time ago before I came here. And then I came here also after that. In this way, you have no right to reject me or throw me out of the seven hills because you don't want it. But my special master, he said, Ramanuja, he said in his two hands, because of his love for you, he is practically carrying the material and spiritual world in both his hands, he said. And he is the one who has given me this place to serve you. So my service to you is my birthright. You cannot stop it. He told him. And he said, I will anywhere enter service to you. Look here, I have made this beautiful garland for you. And I am keeping it in front of you. If you like, you may accept. If you don't like, you may not accept. But I have to fulfill the order of my special master, Acharya, I said. And immediately Srinivas became very pleased. He grabbed the garland and put it on himself. And he said, I was just testing your Acharya Bhakti. How much nishtha you have for your special master, he said. And Anantalvar became very pleased. So, one day, it was a spring season. And in the spring season, in spring season there are beautiful flowers that blossom in the garden. So naturally it's a Pushpa Mandapakam. You can imagine how beautiful flowers must have blossomed in that garden. Anantalvar was very, very happy seeing those flowers. And every day morning he would go to see. He would pluck flowers in a certain formation and take them for making garland and offer. Another day morning, it was ninth day I think, sixth day onwards he started observing that the garden was practically bereft of flowers. Somebody had plucked away all the flowers. Somebody had walked in the middle of the garden because of which the plants were all spoiled. So he's wondering, who is doing this? He inquired and nobody knew. So then he started on the ninth day, he hid himself in the bushes of that garden to find out who is this person doing in the night. So, in the night, suddenly he saw, just like a lightning, he saw two beautiful personalities, like lovers, husband and wife. He saw them walking through the garden, plucking the flowers. At first he was very delighted to see them. Their bodies were shining, they were dressed with jewelry and ornaments, and they were very beautiful. Immediately he came out of the bush and he threw a rope around them to capture them. Immediately that man, he ran away and he disappeared from the sight. He could only catch that lady. He bound her by the rope and immediately tied her to a tree, and the lights are put on, and he asked her, who was that fellow with whom you are roaming? Where is he? Where did he go? What is his name? He asked her. And she said, he is my husband. Don't you know the Shastras? In Shastras, it is said one should not call the name of the husband, so I cannot tell you his name. And she said, but I can tell you, I am a Nirapradhi. I didn't do anything. Because he brought me here and he plucked all these wonderful flowers and gave me, I just accepted. So I am not at fault. So please don't punish me. Please leave me free. I want to go. And he told her that because he loves you, he has to come to fetch you, surely. At that time I will capture him. Till then I am not going to leave you, I will keep you here only. And she said, see, you are like my father. A father should be very compassionate to the daughter. How can you tie me with rope like this? So it is said, in Dwapara Yuga, Krishna was tied with a rope by Mother Yashoda to the vocal, isn't it? Similarly, Ananta Alvar, he tied this lady. Who was this lady? He told her, you look like Mahalakshmi. She was Sakshat Mahalakshmi only. None other than Mahalakshmi. And the whole night he was sitting under the tree, guarding her, waiting for Srinivas to come, waiting for the Lord to come. He was not aware by Yogamaya potency. He was not aware. When the morning hours came, the pujaris, the priests went into the temple of Balaji. They opened the door and in the chest they found the golden ornament in the chest. The chest was hollow, it was open. And there was no golden ornament there. The Kastuba jewel was not there. They immediately, the managers, they caught the priests and they were taken to Ananta Alvar. The Lakshmiji is Srivasachinha in the chest of the Lord is missing. It's hollow. It's open, hollow. And he was wondering. They're wondering, where is it? What happened? Then by the time, she said, there's a beautiful Tamil poem which I would like to, two line. So, Lakshmi, she was tied down to the champak tree by Ananta Alvar. And when they conveyed, and then the Lord spoke to the pujaris, he told them, you know why my chest is hollow, why the Kaustubha Mani is not there? Because you are Ananta Alvar, he has taken my consort and he has tied her under the tree and kept her. Please kindly ask him to spare her. So that she can reside on my chest, the Lord said. As soon as the pujaris went and told, Ananta Alvar became very afraid that I have done an apachar. Immediately he came, he immediately released her, and he prostrated before her and praying for forgiveness. And Lakshmi, she told him, no, you consider me as your daughter. And immediately she transformed herself into a kanya. And then she told, that you take me to Srinivas and you marry me to Srinivas. So she gave the opportunity to Ananta Alvar to treat her as a daughter and to give her daughter in marriage to Srinivas. The young lady immediately transformed herself and adorned the chest of Lord Srinivas. See, this is a Tamil slogan. Malayil Vengadavarku Mamanar Vaadiye Alar Mel Mangai Thiruvakku Appanar Vaadiye. What is the meaning of this? Glory to Anantalvar, who is the father-in-law of Lord Srinivas. Glory to Anantalvar, who is the father of Alar Mel Mangai or Lakshmi. In this way, the Lord gave him that wonderful privilege. It is said, sometimes Srinivas and Lakshmi, they would come to that beautiful Pushpaka garden and sit there along with Anantalvar and be chatting with him, talking to him for a long time. In the middle of the night, they would talk to him. He was such a great devotee. In this way, many, many wonderful pastimes of Balaji, you will hear Balaji speaking to Anantalvar and many, even Ramanuja also. So, today is the day we are going to have the... I spoke all these things here because you can't speak it in the new temple land. There many newcomers will come. So, just as Lord Srinivas or Balaji is reciprocating with Anantalvar, with his devotee, you will also find Lord Ram or Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna reciprocating with the devotees. I think today also is the appearance of Mother Sita, isn't it? Yeah. Today is also the appearance of Mother Sita. So Sita also reciprocates with her devotee. When we were in Pandharpur, we were learning about the meaning of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Every word, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 every word has a meaning. And the meaning becomes deeper and deeper as you go. Like for example, when you say Hare, it is pleasure potency of the Lord. And Krishna is all-attractive Krishna. But it also has a meaning, oh Lord, please uplift me from the ocean of cycle of birth and death. It begins like that. And then the meanings go further as, oh Lord, please give me a place, eternal residence in your spiritual world. And then it goes on to say, oh Lord, please give me some service at your lotus feet. And then it goes on to say, oh Lord, let me assist your pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani, in your service to you. And then meaning goes, the last two Hare's, the very wonderful meaning. This is written by Gopala Guru Goswami. The first, last, after the two last Hare's, he says, the first Hare means, Maam Sva Angi Kritya Saharamasva, he prays. Which means, please accept ownership over me and engage me in Krishna's service. So how many of you would like to be owned by somebody else? Have you heard of the slaves in Africa who were sold to Americans? Just like they sell camels, elephants, horses. Like that they would sell blacks in the marketplace. Which means you can go to the market, buy a black, bring him to your home, and lifelong he will serve you. Wash this, wash that, do this, do that. You can engage him as a slave. You can own him. That's how slaves were treated. Here he is saying, Maam Sva Angi Kritya means, you accept me as your slave and engage me in your service. And I am a property purchased by you. He is saying like that. So this is not just a servant. This is a very high platform. Where an unconditional servant feels like that. An unconditional servant actually wants to serve and doesn't expect anything. And he doesn't complain. He doesn't find fault. He has no expectation. This is the platform of the last verse of Shikshashtaka. What is it? Ashlishyava padaratam pinashtumam adarshanat marmahatam karotuva yatatatava vidadatulampato matprananatastu sayevanam. So whatever you want, you may do, you may beat me, you may chastise me, embrace me, whatever way you want to engage me in Lord's service, engage me. And the next Hare, last Hare means, Maya Saha Ramaswa means, you enjoy me, which means, let me be enjoyed by you. Actually, this is very difficult to understand. What is the meaning of this? Saha means together, which means, although I want you to use me as an instrument in your service, you don't cast me far away, keep me in your company. That is the meaning. So I was, I will say something in connection to these two Haris from Ramayana. Huh? Here from Ramayana it is more easily understandable than with Radha and Krishna. Huh? With Radha and Krishna, if you tell pastimes of how we should submit to Srimati Radharani in this mood, it is very difficult to understand. To understand how the Sakis are surrendering to Srimati Radharani. Huh? Like in Mayapur, you find this Parama Prishta Sakis, the eight Sakis are there on either side, four. Isn't it? They are all like this. Huh? In fact, they are all Radharani only. They are all expansions of, they are called as Kaya Vyuha. Kaya Vyuha means they all expand from Radharani's body. They are not Jivas. Huh? But next to that eight, there are 100 others who are all Sakis of Radharani. Huh? They all surrender in this mood. And then there are many other gopis also. Nitya Sakis, Prana Sakis, Radha Snehadika Sakis, Krishna Snehadika Sakis. Many, some of them are more favorite. For them, Krishna is more favorite. For some of them, Radharani is more favorite. For some of them, both Radha Krishna are favorite. Huh? And they all serve in the same mood. But we can tell some examples from Ramayana, which will make this points a little more clear. Hmm? When Hanuman arrived at Sri Lanka and searched for Mother Sita, it was a very frantic, very difficult search. Hmm? At last he could find, locate Mother Sita. When he was sitting at the top of a big palace wall, from there he observed Mother Sita sitting under the Ashokavan. And he jumped over the trees and at last went to the tree top. From there he could see Sita closely. And Hanuman was a spy, so naturally he was keeping calm. He first wanted to observe and see what's happening there. He was telling even the most important message sometimes may not be conveyed because of a foolish messenger who commits a blunder. So he said to himself, I should not be a foolish messenger, I should be very careful. Because he thought that, he saw in the early morning of Ravana coming along with 100 ladies carrying lamps for him. He came to meet Sita and he was like so much harassing Sita. Sita covered herself, her sari, and turned around, bowing her head down. And Ravana was speaking angry words at her. He was telling, why are you having so much reservation against marrying me? You don't know the Lord of Lanka. I have so many 5,000 servants. I have crores of Rakshasa soldiers surrendering to me. Even the demigods tremble in front of me. They put their turban down and bow down to me. Do you know the Pushpaka Viman that I am taking? I have stolen it from Kuvera. And now Kuvera is hiding somewhere in the Himalayan zone out of fear for me. So he was going on praising about himself. And he said, you know, why are you all the time thinking of that forest dweller, Ram? Already he lost all the kingdom and 14 years he was supposed to go to forest. Now I don't know whether he is alive or dead. Why are you unnecessarily behind him? And he told her, but if you marry me, you can wear the costliest of the dresses, rarest of the jewelry. You can drink the most sweetest of the beverages and finest of the delicious foods. And you will have thousands and thousands of servant maids serving you and attending to you and dressing you and putting very flavor, nice kinds of scents in your body and decorating you with jewelry and everything. It was like sort of trying to allure her. Sita didn't speak a word. And as he went on speaking like this, at one time Sita stopped him from bragging and she took a grass and put it in the front and said, by putting the grass, Sita showed him that I don't want to talk to you directly. And there's a distance between you and me. And she said, with this small grass I can burn you down if I want. But I want Lord Ram to come and destroy you. That is why I am waiting. And then she even preached to him. She said, your wise man should always be satisfied with his wife. And you should treat every other man's wife as a mother. You are supposed to give protection to other men's wives like a mother. And you are contemplating on enjoying another man's wife. So she said, You deserve to die at the hands of Ram. Just wait and see. So when she spoke like this, Ravana's whole body started trembling. He became very angry. He said, I can kill you right now. But my love for you is keeping my anger under control. Just like an animal is kept under captivation. He said, it appeared that any time he will lose control and beat her or something. And Hanuman was watching all this. Hanuman was wondering, my Lord, all this was happening. And then afterwards Mandodari pacified him and took him back. And all of them went back. So Hanuman thought, and Mother Sita started crying. She started weeping. And then in fact he told her, 12 months from now, it was not 12 months, actually there were only few months that time when he spoke to her. He said, within 12 months, as I had told you before, if you don't agree to my request, I will tell our kitchen cooks to cut you into pieces and cook you as a breakfast for me. And Sita broke down to tears. And some Rakshasis pacified her. Some of the queens of Ravana. Then after Ravana went away, then all the Rakshasis surrounded Sita. Some of them were having mouth in the forehead. You can imagine. Some of them had a pig-like face. Some of them had a camel-like face. And some of them had only one hand, one leg. Some of them had big tummies. They all looked very strange. Some of them had big, big teeth and big mouth. And they were all having flesh pieces and blood, drinking blood time to time. And they all took the weapons and started focusing close on Sita and said, hey, Sita, why don't you want to marry the Lord of Lanka? You are getting such a great privilege. Which woman in this world will get this wonderful golden opportunity? If you don't agree to Ravana's request, we will all cut you into pieces and eat you up here itself. One Rakshasi said, those people who speak, don't do. Those who do, don't speak. And she said, why are you people talking like this? Just cut her into pieces. Let us enjoy the breakfast right now. She was telling. One doctor said, I will eat her succulent thighs. Another doctor said, I will eat her chubby cheeks. Like that, they were all talking. Who will take which part of her body? All the actresses were talking. Oh, Sita started crying. Broke down to tears. She closed her eyes. She said, oh Rama, oh Lakshmana, she called. Why do I have to endure all this horrible situation here? Why are you not coming? Why have you neglected me like this? And immediately she took the rope that was tying her hair. And then she put it, one on the top of the tree, tied in a branch. And another end she tied to her neck. She said to herself, now I will commit suicide. There is no more meaning of maintaining my life. I don't want to be touched by Ravana. Nor do I want to be eaten by these Rakshasas. Thinking of Rama, I will leave my body, she thought. And she was about to commit suicide. But then she found immediately her left eye was quivering. Her left hand was quivering. Left thigh was quivering, which means auspicious signs. So she saw the auspicious signs. And then she had a little hope. Then she thought, okay, this is hope giving, but still I don't know when will the auspicious things happen. So better I die. Then again she was about to put the rope around her neck. That time Hanuman started thinking very fastly. He said, I think I should immediately go down the tree and tell Mother Sita that I am a messenger of Ram. And then he thought, if I tell her like that, what will happen? She will see me as a monkey, she will get frightened, she will scream. Then all the Rakshasis will get up. They were all in a semi-state of sleep, Rakshasis. If they get up, many things could happen. The Rakshasis may try to kill me, although they cannot kill me. But then I will fight with them. They may hurt me and harm me. Then Ravana will send his soldiers to tie me up or something. And then I may probably not be able to reach the message to Ram. So then it would be a foolish idea. And if I don't go down now, then Sita will commit suicide. And how can I go to Ram and tell him that Sita has died? I saw her alive, then I saw her dying. Hearing these words, Lord Ram will die. If Lord Ram dies, Lakshmana will die. If Lakshmana dies, all their brothers will die. And the mothers will die. And hearing this, the Sugriva, that I could not help Ram, Sugriva, Angada, all will die and all monkeys will die. I will also die. He said, this everything will end in a tragedy. So he thought, then how can I go? See, if I go now, the Rakshasis will get disturbed. If I don't go, Sita will die. What to do? Then he immediately prayed to Ram in his heart, and he got an idea. He started suddenly singing Ram's glories. There was a great prince called Ram in Ayodhya, and he had his brother Lakshmana, and they both were sons of Dasharatha. He started singing very beautifully about Ikshvaku dynasty and Ram's marriage with Sita. And Sita started hearing all these things. And when he heard this sweet sound about Ram, immediately she forgot suicide. She removed the ropes and kept. And she started hearing, and slowly she looked up. And there she saw this monkey singing this song, wonderful song. Hanuman didn't even look at her. He was singing, going on singing, in order to draw her attention. And then, after singing like this very wonderfully, completing the song, Hanuman jumped down. And he said, "Oh lady, you look like the consort of Lord Ram. Who are you?" And she felt so nice. Actually, she was telling the monkey, "Oh monkey, really? Are you coming in my dream? Are you really present in front of me?" Hanuman said, I'm here. He said. And she said, "Oh, how nice it is to hear about Lord Ram." Her face became lit up with so much delight. She smiled very brilliantly, as if, she is meeting Ram face to face. So much joy. One name of Shrimati Radharani is Ujjwala Smita, which means she smiles very brilliantly. So, Hanuman went on speaking about Ram, and then she told him, "You are speaking such nice things about Ram. So sweetly, you go on talking about Ram. Tell me more." Then he went on glorifying Ram. Suddenly, Mother Sita got into transcendental madness. She said, "Oh Ravana, how you have cheated me. You came in a monkey-like form and you have tricked me into speaking to you. I will not speak to you anymore." She immediately took about to the other side and covered herself. Hanuman did not try to prove to her that I am not Ravana. He went on glorifying Ram. Again hearing about Ram, she turned around and said, "Oh my dear monkey, when you glorify Ram, I feel so pleased with you. And your company is so soothing to my heart. I think you are a sincere monkey. You are not Ravana. You are certainly Ram's devotee. So I am really greatly satisfied in your company. Okay, go on telling about Ram more. Tell me how you arrived here," she asked. And he said, Hanuman said, "I crossed over Lanka and I came here." Again Sita shouted, "Oh Ravana, now we know you are not this monkey. Because how can a small monkey like you cross over this big ocean and come here? That is not possible. So I think you are actually Ravana. You have disguised yourself as monkey and come," she shouted. And then she said, "I will conduct a test for you to check whether you are Ravana or not." She asked, "Describe to me how Lord Ram looks like. How is his form? What are his qualities? Tell me." Hanuman recollected everything about Ram. And she asked, "Tell me, who are you? How did you come to know that I am here and everything?" Then Hanuman said, "I have already seen you once before. When you were going in the Akashamarg, carried by Ravana, you put all the jewelry in a towel and you tied it and threw it down. I saw you at that time. Now I am seeing for the second time. I can recognize." And she understood, yes, it is true. And Hanuman told his descent, from which family he comes from, and how Sugriva and Ram met. Everything he told. She became very pleased. "Yes, now I have firm faith in you, that you are not come to cheat me." And adding to this, Hanuman took out that beautiful ring and gave it to Sita. And Sita saw the name of Ram engraved in that ring. She became so happy. There were tears in her eyes of joy. She touched it to her eyes. And she told Hanuman, "Hanuman, I am eternally grateful to you. How can I express my thanks to you?" She said, "You have, by bringing this ring, you have given me a feeling of bringing Ram himself to me." And she said, "You should immediately go back and tell Ram that this Ravana may anytime kill me. If Ram doesn't come and rescue me, I will not be able to survive. I cannot maintain my life. Or probably I will die even before Ravan kills me in separation." And then Hanuman said, "Surely I will do that. I am going immediately." She said, no, please stay. Stay one more day and talk the glories of Ram. I think that is better. You know why? Because by the time you go to give message to Ram, I may die. It's better that instead of you going, you stay here and keep telling me about Ram. That way you'll be able to maintain my life. But then, if you're talking to me, then how will the message reach Ram? So she was feeling a transcendental tussle in her heart due to intense love for Ram. Like that. And then she asked, do you think there is any way by which I can meet Ram as soon as possible? Hanuman said, I am here, mother, I will carry you to Ram. Please do not worry. And she thought of the prospect of going to Ram. She immediately became jubilant. She said, really, you can take me? Wonderful. Yes, I can take you, he said. And then she said, just look at you. You are an ordinary monkey and your ideas are also like monkey-like idea. You are such a small monkey. How will you carry me? She said. Hanuman became insulted. She said, mother, don't you know who I am? Just wait and see who I am. I will show you. He went little behind. Ooh, like that he grew a big form. It was Hanuman's form. He showed that huge form, which is some 240 miles by 80 miles or something. Big. He showed that huge form. And then again he became small and came to Masita and said, did you see me? I can very easily cross over this mighty ocean. Everything. She said, no, Hanuman. I don't want to come with you. Because even if you carry me, all these Rakshasas may attack you. And while you are fighting with Rakshasas, what will happen to me? And besides that, she said, I don't want to be touched by any man other than my Lord Ram. And you may take me back to Ram safely, but I want Lord Ram to come here and kill Ravana and prove his prowess, after which I want to be taken back. So she said, you go and give this message to Ram. She spoke to him. And in this way, Mother Sita, when she was talking to Hanuman like this, what was going on in Hanuman's mind? Hanuman was thinking, in his own heart he was telling to Ram, my dear Ram, I have saved the life of your beloved, Sita, who was about to commit suicide, by giving her solace, by giving information about you. So I feel very joyful. This is the beloved for whom you are ready to give up your life. This is the same beloved for whom you are constantly mourning and lamenting. This is the same beloved whose disappearance from you, whose going away from you has caused such grief in your heart. But by giving solace to her, by talking about you, I feel immense joy in that. Now very soon, I will bring the news about her to you and give solace to you also. In this way, I will give solace to each other. I will talk to Sita about you and I will give solace to her. And I will come to you and tell you about Sita and I will give you solace also. And giving solace to both of you is the ambition in my life. I have no other ambition. He was thinking like this in his mind. And after offering obeisances to Sita, actually at that time, Hanuman asked him, do you have any information that you want to pass on to Ram? And Sita that time told Hanuman that I will tell you some of the most confidential pastimes that took place between us. In one of the Hare Krishna Mahamantras, Hare, that Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, you know, the one of the Hare means, O Srimati Radharani, reveal your pastimes to me. That is one Hare. Another Hare is, give me entry into your pastimes. That is also another meaning. Here you find Mother Sita revealing one of the pastimes. She is telling, you know, there was one Jayanta who was son of Indra. And he once took the form of a crow. And he was coming and sitting when Mother Sita and Ram were once near the side of a river. They were sitting and seeing the beauty of nature, sitting together. And this crow came and started clawing. With his claw, he started touching Mother Sita. Sita cried and became afraid. Lord Ram was laughing. And then he drove away the crow. And then both of them slept. She was lying on the lap of Ram and she slept off. But when they both slept, taking advantage of the situation, the crow came there and started clawing on the chest of Sita. Due to lusty propensities. When Lord Ram, when blood started coming in her chest, immediately Lord Ram felt that and he opened his eyes. He became angry on the crow and he took a piece of grass and he invested it with potency of a mantra and he hurled it on the crow, and few pieces of grass started glowing like lightning. That started coming towards the crow. And the crow saw that and started flying away. He flew all over the universe. And the pieces of grass didn't leave the crow. It went on chasing him everywhere, everywhere. At last the crow came and fell at the feet of Ram. Sita and Ram saw the crow at the feet. So Sita told him to show some sympathy on the crow. So Lord Ram said, but this astra which I have put on him, it cannot go in vain. Okay, I will use it. So he took that astra and hit one of the eyes of the crow. One eye became blind. That's why crows nowadays see like this. Crack, crack. They see like this. You've seen this? They see with one eye. Like this they see, yeah. You've seen that? All the crows, they cannot see directly. They see like this. So she told this pastime of the intimate moments that she had with Ram. Such a confidential pastime she told to Hanuman. And she also told another pastime. She took out her chudi from her hair and said, if you show this to Ram, he'll remember three people. Because this was given by my father to me in the presence of Ram and his mother and father. He will immediately remember me, he will remember his father, he will remember his mother and my mother and father also. They all will be remembered by Ram immediately by seeing this one thing. So she gave it to Hanuman and said, please kindly take it and pass it to him. And give it to Ram as a remembrance. So you can find how Hanuman gradually won the trust of Mother Sita. Internal potency. What is it was? Daivim prakritim ashritam. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritam. Bhajantyananja manaso jnatva bhutadimavyayam. So, once you take shelter of the internal potency, Sita or Radharani or Lakshmi, once you take shelter of them. How? By reading these pastimes, you understand. How can one win her trust? See, Hanuman was a truthful devotee. Still, he could not win the trust so easily. It took some time. Because majority of the living entities, they only want to enjoy separate from Ram. If Sita finds that there is someone who wants to serve Ram without wanting to enjoy her, like Ravana, then only she will have faith. Then only she will have trust. And Hanuman, in this way, by glorification of Ram, he gradually won her faith. And the proof that Hanuman won her faith is that she accepted the ring that he gave and she gave him the chudi. She revealed confidential pastimes that took place between Ram and Sita. And she heard from him the glories of Ram that he spoke of. Actually, who can speak glories of Ram better than Sita, the Divine Mother? In fact, she is so delighted in the glories of Ram that she was ready to hear him for a prolonged period of time. And she sent a message to Ram. And in this way, Hanuman connected Ram and Sita very wonderfully, giving information to each other about each other. Very wonderfully. So Sita's devotion to Ram and her love for Ram is actually the central subject matter for all living entities to meditate upon and to relish in one's heart. For Srinivas, we have Bhudevi and Sridevi on either side, isn't it? So Lakshmi is glorified by this wonderful prayer. Mata samasta jagatam madukaita bhare vaksho viharini manohara divyamurte Shri Swami Nishita Jana Priyadana Shile Shri Venkatesha Dayite Tava Suprabhatam Aravinda Lochane Babatu Prasanna Mukachandra Mandale Vidishankarendra Vanita Virarchite Prishashailanata Dayite Dayanide. Oh, Ocean of Mercy, Mother Lakshmi, it is praying. Mataha. Mata means mother. Samasta jagatam. You are the mother of the whole universe. Is saying. Madhu Kaita Bhare. And Madhu and Kaitabha demons were killed by the Supreme Lord, and you are his very dear consort. Vaksho Viharini. In the heart of Lord Srinivas, you are residing. In that pastime, I told you, when Ananta Alvar, when he immediately untied Lakshmi from the tree, she became a kanya, and then she came, he offered her to Srinivas in hand to hand, and immediately she occupied the heart of Srinivas, because that is the residing place. Vaksho Viharini Manohara Divya Murte. And she also has a transcendental form. In this way, Sri Swamini Shita Jana Priyadana Shile Sri Venkatesha Daite Tava Suprava. So Venkatesha Daite means you are very dear to Lord Venkatesha. Tava Suprabhatam Aravindalochane. Just like Lord has lotus eyes, she also has lotus eyes. Aravindalochane. Bhavatu Prasannamukha Chandramandale. And your face is like a full moon. Prasannamukha means very cheerful face. Very cheerful, smiling face. And then you are Vidhi Shankara Indra Vanitabhir Archite. Vidhi means Brahma. Shankara means Shiva. Indra means Indra. So who is Brahma's wife? Saraswati. Shankara's wife? Parvati. And Indra's wife? Sachi. Vidhi Shankara Indra Vanita. Be Archite. They all are doing Archana for you. And they are all that goddesses, all goddesses, they worship you. Like that is praying, wonderful prayer. So this prayer can be offered to Sita also. It can be offered to Radharani also. Because all of them are in one tattva only. Same tattva. So in this way, Prabhupada says in the second paragraph that a devotee, the personalist, however, worships the Lord out of a great sense of gratitude, utilizing ingredients born out of the bodily limbs of the Lord. The fruits and flowers are available from the body of the earth. And yet Mother Earth is worshipped by all of them. Similarly, Ganges and everything he says. So, Ramanuja was so eager to have Anantacharya go and make the Pushpaka garden with flowers and fruits and offer it to Balaji. And he derived great satisfaction in seeing that. Because the devotees of the Lord are fond of serving the Lord. And they get reciprocation from the Lord also. Unlike the impersonalists who are complacent, who think that we are God. Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.